HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 61, recorded Thursday, April 19th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET Web Applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses with guest Chris Sells the impact of the last 15 years of software.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Carl Franklin has the week off, and I am sitting here in the den computer room of iniquity with Chris Sells. Chris Sells.
I just call it my office, but from now on, I will be calling it my computer room of iniquity.
So we were chatting earlier about what we would talk about, and we had the idea that we would talk about where is software and Microsoft going to go in the next 15 years, and you had a better idea to talk about what we've done in the last 15 years as a kind of a prequel or a prelude to the first discussion. So 15 years ago was what, 92?
Yeah, 92. What were we? Well, I remember in 92, that's when I took Essential Comm from Don Box. And after that, I was, within a couple of months, I was teaching. And I remember that being a whole, we had just come off the, what was the name of that silly architecture where we had the thing in the middle.
DNA.
It was even before DNA. There was this, like Tappy was an example of this, where we had the Tappy DLL and you program your apps against it. And then you had the provider API underneath and Microsoft provided the thing in the middle. And it was like WOSA or I don't even remember what they called it, but some architecture.
Windows Unified Software.
Something like that. Yeah. And now we had just moved from that into COM. Component-based software, and that I remember that being a huge idea, the idea that we had binary components, that we could build reusability into our software and use it across languages. Now, that actually had some, I mean, that wasn't just talk. We could almost actually do that.
I remember 92, 93, I was working at a place that did car parts cataloging, and people would say, I have an 85 Caprice or whatever, and I want to see a fax with all the parts on it. And we had this huge database, many, many megabytes in size.
Yes. Wow. Many megabytes.
I think it was like SQL 425 or 421 or something like that.
Sure, sure.
And NT, it was just in beta, NT 3.5.
3.5, 3.5.1. Yeah. That was the era. Yes.
And when component-based software kind of blew me away was then when it came time for us to generate the fax, we automated Word because Word 6 had come out.
Oh, sure.
And we ran this Visual Basic app on the server side that would listen to the fax. You know, we had like a digiboard or whatever, calls would come in.
We had
a fax farm.
Yes.
But we had this server with 16 megabytes of RAM that would automate all these copies of Word and build from the database, for each car. And we built these giant Word docs and then faxed them. And it was Word software as a service, and Word as a service.
I know to this, even to this day, people still try to build websites that generate Excel spreadsheets by automating Excel on the back end, which does not work at all. And in fact, has spawned a whole mini industry within a component industry for just components that generate Excel compatible files.
Yeah. I just make, XML spreadsheet format.
Yep.
But you're right. That kind of has become the exact wrong thing to do.
Yes.
That's the prototypical example.
But people do it all the time. Yeah. So I look at the technology by how easy it is, how powerful the technology is how easy it is to build a bad thing that still works. And so the beauty of component-based software is that you could build something that would just a terrible architecture, right? That you could automate Excel on a heavy multi-user system, and it would sort of almost sometimes work. And it was the whole idea of binary components that enabled that.
Wouldn't that mean that .NET is making it just that much easier to do stupid stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But what about the pit of success, right? I mean, Rico Mariani says, allow them to fall into the pit of success. make your system such that even if they screw up, it still turns out okay.
Well, so, and I guess that's a much better way to say what I say, right? Which is, even if you write something that's not optimal or even approaching optimal, you can still solve your problem well enough to move on, right? There are two kinds of computer people, right? There are the computer people like you and I, and probably most of your listeners, that are unhealthy about their love of computers, right? That they obsess over writing good code, and that has a meaning to them, right?
Right. The purity for purity's sake.
Exactly right. And these are the people that look at an architecture, they look at code, and they don't even think about it anymore. They just have this Persig style quality, right? They can feel the quality or not, and they keep working on it until the quality oozes.
I can feel the quality so much that I know now it's been 10 years since I've written some decent code.
Really?
You know, like my sense of code smell is so highly advanced.
Code smell,
I cannot write any good code at all. I am incapable of writing code. I'll write like 4 lines and I'll just go, oh yeah, but oh, what if someone used this line of code at 2 a.m. the moment the date, you know, the DST
switched? Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, it'll never work in Sri Lanka. Oh, you know, and then.
Well, so there, again, we
then have. Then I apply my success as a metric thing.
Exactly.
Right?
So, you know, we are unhealthy in our love of the computer code, right? And then there's most of the programming population, the people that actually have business problems to solve, and they solve them, and they install and deploy and support the systems and move on with their lives. And their business makes money as
a
result of that.
And they sleep well at night.
Exactly right. Until their pagers go off, of course.
Okay, so I slept pretty well 15 years ago.
Well,
because we had a system and it worked really well.
There you go. And right. And you had cobbled together these pieces, and it was this binary component object model thing that enabled it. So that binary component's big thing. And of course, the binary component kind of in the abstract, and the power of that was the Clement Sapersky book, the component book. Do you remember the title of that book? So the reason I bring that up is because Clemens is on my team now at
Must be weird.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. He's a good guy. He's a really good guy. Yeah. He's fun to work with.
You're just kind of go, you're Clement, you know, you're in the middle.
Well, except I also work with Chris Anderson, Don Box.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could spend a lot of time.
There is that. Just kind of, you can be all wide-eyed.
But Clemens Vasters works around the hall from me. I run into him all the time. I mean, you know, there's a lot of that.
Two Clemens on one floor.
Yes. In fact, the only two Clemens in all of Microsoft work in the same corner of the same building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay, so binary objects, that was a big deal
right.
in 92. So what else? What since then?
Graphical stuff. I mean, hey, even your secretary can write an application. You just drag a button onto a form.
So I would say the Alan Cooper style drag and drop UI design, that the what you see is what you get for application developers, that was huge. Right? Visual Basic 1.0 and on
MFC Class Wizard.
Yeah, absolutely. The dialogue editor and MFC, and you could go back and forth between that and your code.
Yeah.
But I'd say that probably the best example of that is really the WinForms designer. I'm in love with that.
Really? You think so?
I am. I'm not a big fan of the...
I always got frustrated when I would do something. I'd go and edit the "you're not supposed to edit this part."
Sure.
And I'd get the big kind of like red icon of death.
The big red X. Yes, absolutely. And of course... So what I was going to say is I'm not a big fan of the serialization format they chose, which looks an awful lot like C# or VB, but isn't, right?
Well, yeah.
And so you know, as I look forward, I see a better serialization format.
XAML.
Yeah, XAML, absolutely. But
which makes me feel like we've just come back to 15 years ago. It's just now they're .XAML files, not .RC files.
Sure. I'd say that's true, although
The young kids today don't know that, though. The young people.
Well, and of course, you know, .rc files are just the same as HTML files, which are the same as however we define screens.
Which was the same as a 3270 terminal.
3270, absolutely.
Right. The web as 3270 terminal has been an ongoing thing for me.
Yes, absolutely. That's
exactly here we are remoting UI again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly
now we're going all the way back to the chubby client again.
But the reason I would...
Silverlight.
Yeah, agreed.
Silverlight is like, well, JavaScript is a lousy computational engine. Let's really be serious in this time, and let's enable some managed code on the client, but make it less difficult to get the runtime.
So Silverlight is definitely a graphics, you know, cross-platform, high-performance, high-fidelity graphics video platform.
Yeah, GDI-specific, 2D.
But it's still all... oh, yeah, but Well, it's still all JavaScript driven on the client, yes?
Well, no, it's JavaScript driven to get the information in and out of it from the DOM, from the HTML DOM into Silverlight and back. But in March or May of 2006, Mike Harsh, the PM for Silverlight, on his blog said that it will have managed code support. So it's become a tiny little runtime.
Is that the case in the 1.0 version?
That's what everyone's speculating will happen next week at Mix. I can't say either way. We just did it. Our last show was on Silverlight.
Sure.
So, Paul Wilson of Wilsons.net had basically combed through every interview that Scott Goo ever did.
Right.
And, analyzed the ums and the ahs. And everyone believes that there's some kind of managed runtime next week that's happening inside of Silverlight to enable C# in the browser on a Mac.
So I have, in my WPF book, an appendix written by Sean Wildermuth on Silverlight, WPFE.
Good guy.
Yeah. Big Sean fan. I've been trying to get him hired at Microsoft forever. Anyway, that's what I do with all my friends. Haven't I tried to get you?
You have.
That's true. Okay. So we have a Silverlight appendix in our book because the XAML part and the graphics part is very much a subset of WPF at that point.
Right.
But there's nothing about managed runtime on the client in that appendix.
Yeah. Is that chapter gone to print?
No, it hasn't.
Then you know. I have no idea.
Well, and we definitely are.
All I know
is keeping our eyes open for Mix.
Yeah, that's what they intended. That's what Mike Harsh. Again, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been printed publicly on MSDN blogs.
I got it.
So my point being, though, that whether it's JavaScript or whether it's C#, it doesn't matter. The point is that there's all these Pentium 4s out there not doing any freaking work. They're waiting around for angle brackets to show up so they can do something with them. For the most part, my CPU is largely idle. I mean, basically, my CPU does two things. It waits for web pages to show up so it can show them to me, and it makes thumbnails.
So it's
funny. Explorer. Those are the two things that my CPU does.
So it's funny because
why aren't we using the web as a big... Why aren't web applications more of the kind of distributed computation farm kind of a thing?
So I absolutely do. I definitely do surf to websites, right? I do. I mean, I look up movies.
You're
on websites.
You're admitting here on Cancel Minutes
yes,
to surf the web.
I surf the web, absolutely.
Okay, right. You heard it here first.
I search for information on the web. But I'll tell you, more and more, I mean, I live and breathe the real Outlook, right? Not the web Outlook. I spend all my time in various copies of Visual Studio, sometimes 2-3 at a time, Word, PowerPoint. I'll probably...
These are all connected applications, you're saying, though. But they're outside the browser frame. They own their own frame.
Not only... Yes, and they take advantage of the operating system platform. So much so, in fact, that I just had to order some new memory for my laptop.
Well, let me give you an example. Like someone said on an Alias recently that they were frustrated that they have to upgrade to the latest version of QuickBooks because the older versions weren't supported on Vista. And another guy said, well, hey, I just used the QuickBooks web version, and it is 92%, the same. And every once in a while, you'll be using it, and you'll think that it's the real desktop version. And wait a second, I'm on the web. It's that good.
Wow.
But the benefit, the 8% that you lose, and these are just kind of nonsense numbers, but the little few percent you lose is outweighed by the fact that his accountant can log in
sure.
from any machine and manage his...
You definitely see benefits in a connected app.
So what are the benefits of a connected app versus a non-connected app? The only difference is then distribution. One you visit with an URL and one you install from an MSI.
But even so, today with, well, for a while now with ClickOnce and WinForms and WPF, which you visit with an URL, and now with Silverlight, with the rich stuff inside the browser window, rich stuff. It even, before with Flash,
but no touch deploy was largely kind of a 0.9 release and people got frustrated with it.
Right. And ClickOnce is the 1.0.
ClickOnce works pretty well. I've written a number of them.
Yes.
Until you get into certificate revocation problems. There's a pretty, if your certificate, then you're kind of screwed.
Sure.
And that's a known bug.
Sure.
I mean, it's there and it's close, but Office as ClickOnce app.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? That'd be pretty sweet.
So my admission about surfing the web before was mainly about, there's a bunch of apps that I use, 60 seconds at a time all day long.
Mm.
But if I have to spend more than 5 minutes in an app, I can't stand a web app. That Really? Yeah, I'm such a keyboard guy.
Ah,
and I'm such a Windows UI guy.
Okay.
And without that, I can't use an app. It drives me crazy. It really does. And so that's why I'll use OWA only on computers that I occasionally use.
OWA, Outlook Web Access.
Thank you. Simply because it's there and I can use it for 5 minutes to check my email quick to see if I'm late for something or whatever. But then I close it down and I go to my real computer.
But couldn't you live in Gmail?
Actually, Gmail, no. But I'll tell you, I probably could live in Yahoo Mail. When I say Control-N in Yahoo Mail, it works.
See, Yahoo Mail was bought. I think they bought Oddpost.com.
They did. They did. They totally did.
Yeah.
And so I just have a little experimental email address over there, and I like that email client a lot, more than Gmail.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so let's get back onto the main line.
Okay, so the WinForms designer, the reason it's kind of the pinnacle so far, and in fact, if you look at the WPF designer so far, in the developer space, Cider, I'm just waiting for it to get to the same bar set by the WinForms designer.
Tell folks what Cider is.
Oh, sorry. Cider is the WPF designer that's inside of Visual Studio.
Right, so when you install the WPF extensions to Visual Studio or the stuff that'll come with
Orcus. Or Orcus. Orcus already comes with even a better Cider that comes with that came
with. So how many different XAML editors are there now? There's Expression, Blend, and Design.
Yes. And then there's also some folks have been building output filters for like Adobe and things like that.
Yeah. Illustrator.
Thank you. That's a company name, not an application name. Thank you for filling that in for me. There was the Cider one built into Visual Studio. Sure.
There's a XAML pad or something like that.
Oh, well, there's 27 like XAML pads.
But what do you write your XAML in? And don't tell me you write it in Notepad.
I don't write it in Notepad because I need the IntelliSense. I write it in the XML editor in Visual Studio.
Okay. So it's less important that you have a preview for you and more important that you have IntelliSense.
Absolutely.
Now, with HTML, I remember here, so think about this, right? So 92... what was the most difficult thing to do? Like, what was the pinnacle? It was writing an HTML table without looking at the, with the help.
Yep.
That was like, oh, an HTML is great. It's so intuitive, except I really wish I could write a table. So front page existed only for the purposes of allowing people to make really complicated tables with call spans and row spans.
Yep. With all the properties in the property browsers. And in fact, it's funny too, because again, what made front page interesting was that it had this kind of WYSIWYG what you see is what you get, UI design environment.
So I remember, of course, in Word, the first time they had the table painter.
That
blew my mind.
And you could erase the little lines between them. Yeah, that was really
fun. So with XAML, are you anticipating that people are going to just get over it at some point? And when it comes to basic UI stuff, they're going to write them themselves? With IntelliSense?
No, not
the polylines and stuff, but the regular.
No, I don't. I am an oddity in the XAML world.
So won't count that.
Yeah, in many ways, I'm an oddity. But in this particular case, yes, everyone that I know that's written a XAML book is able to be very productive in the raw.
So there's three people on the planet who care to do that. But most people use Expression or use Cider.
Exactly right. That's exactly what I anticipate. But the beauty of... See, this is the huge difference between XAML and WinForms Designer and why it is a big step is if I go and edit the XAML, I can have a reasonable assurance that the editors, the designers, the visual designers will understand it. Whereas with code, as you point out, it's very likely that they won't.
As a short aside, are there buttons and controls in Silverlight?
There are buttons. No, there aren't.
So you don't get any of those things. No. You want a button, you draw it.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the things we talk about in our appendix
is... You do it on purpose.
Yeah.
You did it on purpose.
It's all about what is the minimal environment we can build. We can provide to people to build rich interactive applications.
But not full screen, Silverlight application takes over the entire browser.
You have two choices, right? And we cover both of these in the appendix because they're both important models. One is you can, use it as little islands of XAML in your HTML and use the regular HTML controls. And, you can have an HTML button for pause and play and rewind for your videos, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is you can actually, of course, you can, from the graphics primitives and the interactive primitives they provide, the event mouse and keyboard event handling, you can build things that look like buttons and work like buttons. And you have the styling in XAML and you have the graphics control, and in fact, you can even package them in little reusable things that you serve up from your web server.
But
Okay, so like the one thing about HTML that I've always hated is tables, right?
Sure.
So tables as layout has largely been a solved problem because sure. now it's divs and sure. CSS.
Yep.
But tables as places to put data still exist, right? Of the course. Only purpose for a table is for tabular data.
Sure.
But I have this kind of weird idea in my head that somehow Silverlight is going to replace that. I just want the like the ultimate grid.
Sure.
In Silverlight, so then I'll have divs for everything. And then I'll, you know, still have to figure out how to better lay out forms, but.
So what you're saying is one of two things. One, you look for future versions of Silverlight to have a much richer set of controls built with Silverlight. And I think that's.
Well, I wouldn't say that. Just the first guy to write a really awesome grid.
Or enterprising third parties. Microsoft has made room for enterprising third parties. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in fact, by far and away, the coolest, WPF control that I've seen is the free exceed data grid control.
Interestingly enough, and that's total coincidence, although people won't think so, they were a sponsor of this podcast for a while.
Oh, really?
And they are, if you go into my homepage at Hanselman.com, they're the big black advertisement under my huge head.
I didn't know that, yeah, honestly.
Yeah. But yeah, they're awesome, those guys are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So...
So anyway,
back to the mainline again.
So okay, so the visual drawing of things, WYSIWYG UI.
Was huge. One of the things, actually, as an aside, one of the really cool things about Chris, as long as I've known him, he has the ability to push things on the stack and pop them off and get right back to where you never hear Chris go, "What was I talking about?" He immediately just goes pop, 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 and he's right back where he was. Please.
Okay. Well, that's never knew that about myself.
It's amazing skill.
Well. After all that instructor, I think that's what it was, all the teachings.
Right. Stuff, you right? run you off into a tangent, you come back.
Yeah. Cause the tangents are the fun part. Right.
See, on the other hand, I've completely forgotten why I'm here. no clue.
That's funny too, because when you do that in regular conversations, I have had to learn to not pop a regular conversation back to
freak people out.
Yeah. Cause they really, once they're off in La La Land, they're following their rant. Yeah. They don't want to be pulled
they're
back.
They're done.
That's right. They've had that conversation. Now they're moving on. Yes, I've had to. That's been a problem, in fact, that thing you point out. So anyway, so before 92, I would have said that as an old Unix and Mac programmer, the only thing I liked about Windows 3.1 was the programming environment, assuming I could ignore the silly, low, medium, high memory, whatever it was. Because... Not only did I really like the programming model of User 32 when compared to Unix and the Mac for UIs, but they had the most amazing thing that transformed my programming life. They had F1. I remember programming without F1 and then finding F1. It was like manna from heaven. Yeah. I mean, that changed my programming life forever.
Poor man's IntelliSense at that point.
Well, and then, so in the 92 or after that, isn't that when we started getting IntelliSense? I mean, when did we get that?
VB3?
So I tried programming Visual Basic several times as a COM programmer, right? I
had Yep,
starting in VB4, VB5, right? And I couldn't make it. No. And subsequently I've learned why. Without the subclassing, I just can't factor my code properly. So that's why I could never be a VB6 or below programmer.
Right, right. Because of the uncomfortable, we're not quite object-oriented, we're hiding COM.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, because the entire purpose, I've said this before, the entire point of Visual Basic as a language was to lie to the developer and say, don't look behind the curtain, COM doesn't exist, la la la, I can't hear you.
We like to think of it as a layer of abstraction, as opposed to lie.
I like to think of it as the matrix.
There you go, yes.
Because what was the first thing you wanted to do when you were a hardcore VB programmer? Call Dan Appleman. And get the VBX message cracker
right.
control and see what's really going on.
Getting back to the matrix analogy, the value of Visual Basic is it actually shows you the blondes, brunettes, and redheads, as opposed to making you imagine it the way you have to in
C++. Nice matrix reference.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Kudos.
So I would say that IntelliSense, and now I am completely spoiled, unless a language or a data format or whatever it is I have to type has IntelliSense, I reject it. Out of hand.
So you're not going to go to Ruby until there's Ruby IntelliSense.
Exactly right.
And you're not ashamed to say that.
No,
you're coming out.
Because
a lot of people think that, programming is supposed to be hard. Squiggly lines underneath my,
It's hard enough to make it work, let alone without, the way I learn how to program anything, because there's so much functionality in the world, right? I mean,
it's Reflector. If I didn't have Reflector.
But forget about it. Reflector's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. And I hear somebody in a Microsoft meeting bring up the reflector at least once an hour. It is that useful a tool and that prevalent. I was in a review the other day and Don said, I don't want to see the code. Just bring it up in a reflector. He just wanted to see the OM, right? The raw OM. So reflector is a big deal, but reflector, I was thinking about this the other day because I've been doing PowerScript a little bit.
PowerShell.
Thank you. There's so much existing functionality on my box. If I had some way to list all of the DLL calls I could make and all of the exes I could call with command line arguments and all of the COM objects and all of the .NET classes.
It's a big surface area.
It's a huge surface area. And so if I'm going to navigate that surface area, I want some help. And the help, the thing I do is I go, well, in system.networking is something I want. So I'll go system.networking. Oh, wait, here's the thing. And that's how I learn.
This is Lawrence Ryan. Tune in next week for part two of this discussion with guest Chris Sells, right here on Hanselman's.